Hi, everyone. My name is Tim. Welcome to another episode of the All Out Coach podcast. This is a special edition in which you're going to hear a keynote lecture that I had delivered last year in 2019 to an amazing class of doctors of pharmacy at the Rutgers Institute of Pharmaceutical Industry Fellowships, where I had graduated 15 years prior. So it was a unique opportunity for me to pass the baton back to this university, and also to be introspective and try to close the generational gap that exists to stimulate a new group of next generation leaders to address some of the shortcomings and some of the successes during that 15-year period of time. This is a very revealing episode where I shared a lot of candid insights. Lessons learned, successes, failures. You'll have to excuse some of the audio quality issues, but I'd love to hear some of your comments. Let me know. Subscribe to this All Out Coach podcast and share it with your friends and network. All the best.
We're very fortunate to have him here again. Tim's going to speak about leadership within our generation. He put together a really nice PowerPoint for us just for this PDD. Give it up for Tim.
Let's start with the basics. I think it's very important to start with the basics. To lead means to take someone somewhere. So in that regard, as a leader, you are a GPS. You are a navigator that takes someone to a destination using the best route that you know, that helps them avoid obstacles, and that recognizes them once they reach that destination, that tells them you have arrived. Now, as the next generation leadership that I see here in front of me today, I want to ask you to go one step further and ask, once the people that you lead arrive, where's the next destination that you want to go to? So just as in all leadership courses or leadership presentations that you probably attended, as I have, I'm also going to tell you that, yes, you are all leaders. So I'm sorry to disappoint you, maybe, from some regard, but I will also tell you that. And based on those leadership courses that I've taken, I've always met someone in the group without fail who always says, well, I'm not meant to be a leader, right? Leadership's not for me. Well, that's intrinsically wrong. And I'll be a little bit daring today and I'll tell you that you're all leaders also because you're healthcare professionals, all of you, the pharmacists, or you're in the healthcare profession somehow related to a very important profession in which primary objective, goal for you is not to do no harm. And that is a simplistic definition of leadership that I'll describe in a little bit. I want to start with some of my experiences as an MSL and how I've learned about leadership based on the role that I'm very familiar with, the medical science liaison role. And recently, I published an article on LinkedIn, in my personal LinkedIn page, All Out Coach. And I called it the Fountain of Youth. I called it the Fountain of Youth because in the MSL role, you teach and you learn at the same time. You teach science, you relay science, and you connect people. While not being in the front lines or like the sales reps that everyone is more familiar with, that are somewhat like the vocalists of the song of science, as MSLs, you provide that drumbeat in the background that keeps that rhythm of the science going, that identifies certain needs, certain gaps in the science, and that ultimately advances medicine, one conversation at a time. How do you really measure how effective you are as MSLs if developing key relationships is really the primary role you have? And that's a heated debate for many years, right? How do you measure the MSLs? And I decided to take a stab at it recently. And I published an article on MSL metrics on LinkedIn. A key point in my article is that the MSL metrics have traditionally been regarded as a batting average, where an interaction is an interaction per the attempts that you have for those interactions. Well, in reality, some of your interactions are home runs, others are doubles, others are triples, because some of the interactions that MSLs have lead to publications, lead to somebody becoming a consultant, and you become the primary contact for the company, for that consultant. And that's why slugging percentage is more accurate in terms of describing the multifaceted nature of the MSL role. How many of you here are considering an MSL position when you complete your fellowship? Okay, great. So about 10 of you. It's becoming a very popular position, and it's a global position these days. Certainly, the MSL profession now has been very instrumental in terms of developing conversations that lead to meaningful relationships that lead to leadership and impact. Entering into dialogue is key to developing meaningful relationships. And I mentioned this during our Q&A, developing a continuous dialogue. Because once you enter into dialogue, you have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to develop relationships. And I've had a number of great relationships that have crossed that work-life boundary, if you will, where a lot of my KOLs, or thought leaders, or scientific experts, have now recommended my family, friends, and my own father, who had uncontrolled hypertension, and who had a regimen that needed to be changed very recently. One of my first KOLs, a cardiologist, helped my father as a result of the role to which, and I'm grateful, forever grateful for the profession and for the relationships that I formed. So it's very important to stay in dialogue regardless of whether or not you're in agreement, you're in disagreement, or you have opposing positions. Now, how many times have we all been told, take a deep breath, by our manager, by our parents, by our mentors? And no matter how frustrating that may have sounded to us, because we were very passionate about the position that we had, for example, or about the project, right, or excited about the project, chances are that they were right. And one book that a CEO of a company that also grew very rapidly and that spun off of Baxter, that he shared with the entire employees and that he recommended, was the Pause Principle by Kevin Cashman. And it's certainly very relevant today. In fact, it's ever so relevant in the world in which we live, where pausing becomes somewhat of a luxury. And it's a challenge. It's a challenge to take pause in our social media environment, in our distracted attention deficit world without borders in which we live, in which I'm also very active recently. Now, there's an influencer, Jay Shetty. How many of you guys know or have heard of him? Okay, so many of you have. He, I think, says it best when he says, avoid permanent statements or decisions based on temporary emotions. That is something that you need to really take to heart and take breaks, because crucial conversations are not ones that you need to avoid, particularly at different times, right? I heard that some of you are going through mergers as well, just like I was in my fellowship. And sometimes there are turning points in your direction when you need to clarify your position, acknowledge the other person, and enter into that tough conversation. Another good tip that I recently learned from a book called Crucial Conversations. Has anyone read that book, Crucial Conversations? Here? No? Some of you, great. So Kerry Patterson, I think, does a great job there of providing a lot of very real-world advice that span work-life kind of boundary. And the three questions that you need to ask yourself once you have a disagreement with someone are, what do I ultimately want for myself? What do I want for the other person, and what do I want for the relationship with that person long-term? Which means that you already have an outlook into the next conversation that is supposed to take place. Once you take a pause, it's very important not to be silent and become passive-aggressive. All of these emotions, they blow up, and they're likely to blow up sometime in the future. So it's better to take a pause, but then clarify where you are and maybe converge your positions. Energy management, and energy management not just throughout the day.
I was just coming back
from lunch, but energy management is one of the hot topics now among coaches. Leaving every conversation with the right energy, not with a positive energy necessarily, is very important. Why do I say not with a positive energy? Because when you leave a conversation with something genuine, something specific, something that acknowledges the other person, and something that bridges that conversation to the next conversation, that makes the next conversation more likely to happen, then you leave that conversation with the right energy. And it's very important, it's central to developing relationships over the long term. Another question that I recently read in Harvard Business Review was, how do you disagree with someone that is more powerful than you in your corporate organizational hierarchy, a preceptor or someone? Well, I think that the article provided great advice, and I'd like to share them with you. First of all, it's very important to ask for permission to disagree, because there are certain authorities out there that push us harder, but that do not really ask for your disagreement. So once you really assess the risks and benefits of disagreeing with somebody who has more power, more influence than your organization, you ask for permission to disagree. Once you ask for the permission to disagree, then you state the shared goal that you have. It may be a common project you want to carry. And you may both have the same goal, but you may have different routes that you're taking as different types of leaders that you both are, right? But start with a shared vision, validate what their position is, get agreement from them that is indeed the position that they have, then stick to the facts. Stick to the facts. Avoid adjectives that qualify what the facts or the circumstances that are happening. Meaning, avoid saying things like, well, I think that is very short-sighted. I don't think that we're going to make that deadline. No. Instead of that, you can really leave out the word short-sighted and explain what happened and why you think that you may not meet the deadline, and then base it on the evidence that you have. Then stay humble and acknowledge that it's ultimately their decision. If they do not give you the authority to, or they don't agree to disagree, then maybe take that conversation till next time and ask how can you disagree and next time, or when you can have that conversation. Because not every crucial conversation needs to take place when you think it needs to. There is a baker, Ken Ford, he's from Portland, and he spent most of his life in the corporate world. And then he changed his whole course of his career, really. He became a baker. And the number one point that he communicates in the book is that time and temperature are not key variables, but they're key ingredients to every recipe. And the same is true for our interactions. So if there's one advice that I can give you, in this distracted world that we have, try to give more time and be kinder to others, to each other as well, here. You have a great network, and you're going through the same experiences. When you go through the same experiences, whether it's a failure, whether it's a success, the process itself is what is invaluable. I went through a recent company, a previous company, prior to Eurogen, where I'm working now, where we had a great organization in the field and a product that was differentiated in terms of safety and efficacy. But due to different kinds of factors, variables, culture, resources, and strategy, the product was sold to a bank and then was sold to another bigger company. And the company with great expectations unfortunately went bankrupt. But you learn from those failures. Because I worked with some great group of people and made a lot of great friends. And I remember that when I took this new position, and after that transition, this is one of the big request that I made with my teammates, that in order to value the time that we spent together, let's just simply stay in touch and be a resource to each other in the future. So relationships are not transactions. Remember that. They're not short-term by definition. Unlike what maybe some of the teenager culture, some of the Hollywood popular culture may sometimes lead us to believe in some of the sensational entertainment that we see, relationships are always long-term. And you can apply that concept in life as well as in work. Leadership in 2019 versus 2004. 2004 is when I was in your shoes and I was looking for a full-time position. So the science has certainly changed. There's more emphasis on the neuroscience of it, right? People like, influencers like Simon Sinek, they talk about the oxytocin, different neurotransmitters, the dopamine, right, the serotonin, happiness, chemicals. Now the shift has changed from the delivery, right, to the content. Now you have people who become leaders in a flash, who know what content to share with the right people, and they just simply have a lot of followers. As another influencer, Gary Vaynerchuk, how many of you have heard of him? Probably everyone, right? So Gary Vee, he's someone who I follow, and as he says it best, I think, technology does not make us smarter. It just increases our exposure. And so the exposure for leadership that you have now versus that I had 15 years ago has magnified, has increased. But the focus, however, has also scattered a little bit. So you need to integrate the opportunities that you have with everyone else that you come across with in life and at work. So these are just some of the words that are now becoming more trendy. Emotional intelligence, empathy, authenticity. When I was graduating from the fellowship, for example, Marcus Buckingham's book, From Good to Great, was very popular. And there was a strength finder exercise that we had. And at AstraZeneca, which was my first MSL role, we went through that as a team, the strength finder. And I remember years after that, you know, there were five adjectives or five traits that, you know, identified me very well that I thought were very consistent with me, that I took along with a CV to a manager, to a hiring manager in the future. And years would pass afterwards, and he reminded me that, stuck in his mind, that I actually brought my strict finder exercise to him, to the hiring manager. I talk about authenticity and being genuine. It's very important because as a leader, you want to be somebody who's authentic and who also communicates a message that is consistent with themselves. Because the impact of all of us leaders here and the next generation leaders that are sitting here, you guys, is much greater than you think. You have responsibilities to your colleagues, your friends, family, and the public. And that's what brings me to some of the next formulas that I'm going to share with you. In the spirit of trying to simplify the concept of leadership, to make it more accessible to all of us, because it's quite simpler than we think, but it's a process. I've always enjoyed math to the point where, when I was a teenager, I actually called the NFL because I wanted to find out how the quarterback rating was calculated. For me, that was fascinating. So I may be partial why I'm using mathematics here to explain leadership, but abstract concepts such as leadership and communication can be explained by math as well. Absolute value, a very simple concept. Absolute value is simply the distance from zero. General perception among the public, among the mainstream, is that leadership is absolute, has an absolute value, if you were to put a number to it. Meaning that regardless of your ultimate effect on society or on others, if you have 1,000 followers, for example, you're probably considered probably, not by those in this room, but by the mainstream or the general public, stronger leader than someone who has 20 followers, which is not always true, right? As we all know. So my definition on all our coach of leadership is very simple. It's simplified. It's the net people that you help versus you harm in life. Now, you have to remember that with the best of your intentions of trying to benefit others, there's always going to be someone who's going to be, who's going to either feel like they're harmed by it, or they're going to be slighted. They're going to feel slighted that you did not mention that them, because they may have inspired your idea, or they may be in the same field and they may have competitive thoughts, and they may be one of your competitors. As long as you are convinced and you know yourself and you study yourself all the time that the message that you have benefits more people than others, then you have what I call the leadership foundation. Math explains communication as well. Okay, every message that we share with others follows simple math. You either add, you multiply people and you create more leaders, or you subtract and you divide people and populations. Now let me tell you about one time when I made a mistake, or I was misinterpreted with a message that I had shared. There was a meeting of 200 or so professionals at AstraZeneca, at a company, field organization as well as the executive team, both the field medical and the field commercial. And there were a lot of ideas that we were running with, and we were divided into different teams, workshops. I was on a team that the ideas that we came up with were chosen, were voted to represent the entire group, entire medical group. All right? We were voted, and I happened to be the spokesperson in that occasion. So I remember getting up on stage, clearly recognizing the second place and the third place teams. And they got up, and I saw smiles on their faces, and I was feeling excited. And I shared this quote: "The superior man is one who knows what is right. The inferior man is one who understands what will sell." The idea of that quote was to emphasize integrity, the importance of integrity, which you need whether you're a sales rep or you're a medical science liaison. So I have many friends who I owe to this day for the network that they helped me with on the commercial side. And when I got off the stage, everyone was fine. I received a pretty warm reception. There's one person on my team who clearly misinterpreted this message, because he reminded me, "Tim, there are sales reps in this room also." You know? So even though the message was not intended to denigrate sales reps profession at all, because the true sales reps, strong sales reps, also know that in order to be effective in front of physicians, they don't have to sell medication, but they have to communicate why that medication is right for that patient, for that disease statement, for that physician. It's a difference. The difference here between the two concepts is having self-interest here, or self-wealth, self-benefit, versus benefiting others. The more other people you will benefit, the more leaders you will be. I talked a little bit about the leadership foundation, which I consider being central to developing into a leader. Because many people take a long time to really get to know themselves, because they don't analyze themselves, they don't ask for feedback. Many of you have, mentioned you need to ask more feedback, which I completely agree with. Because their messages are not always consistent with the intentions that they have and with the person that they are. There are two stages from my perspective of reviewing all the different leadership coaches and from my own life, two stages to leadership, and they are leadership foundation and then leadership recognition. Traditionally, most leadership books and most of the great teachers that we have in leadership, they're concentrated on recognition, sharing techniques on delivery, on how to get more followers, pitch, presentation style, and so forth. Sometimes neglecting self-awareness, self-management, emotional intelligence, which is now becoming more popular. So that pendulum is now swinging a little bit. But the two stages are not exclusive of each other. There's a constant cycle. So once you have those presentation skills, for example, and you have the million followers, you always need to tie back to who who you are as a person, so that you convey that authenticity that everybody really relates to. Okay? I talked a little bit about the different influencers that are popular now, right? And I think if you're in the general public listening to them, you may be confused, right? Because you hear some people tell you, be genuine. You hear other people tell you, craft your message to the audience, which, yes, I agree, it's correct. And then you have others who tell you, don't worry about what other people think, right? So before people really analyze themselves and who they are, they can't really be genuine, right? Because the people, once they learn who they are in relation to society, once they know that they want to benefit other people, because not everybody, unfortunately, wants to do that in the public. Not everybody in this room, of course. So, but that's a very important point, to really take a pause and always reflect on yourself. As Socrates said, life that's unreflected is not worth living. So many people take long years until they have that leadership foundation. You know, you are already a leader when you know yourself, know that you intend well for others. And you don't need to be a recognized leader to feel like a leader. All of us, your fellows, your students, you're already leaders. You've already achieved a lot just by being here in this truly exceptional fellowship, in which really has given me, for example, a baton, and that I'm able to pass it back today. As a leader, I mentioned that you touch many different people, your families, your friends, right, your colleagues. Well, you need to understand that we all lead, but we all forget to lead because of the toll that life takes on us, the daily activities, right, the daily responsibilities that we have. As I mentioned, there's always at least one person who attends a leadership course and says, look, it's not for me, I'm not a leader. Well, they don't want to assume the next responsibility. They don't want to step outside of that comfort. It's just as important to be grateful and to apologize just as loudly and quickly as when you make errors and when you criticize others. It's very important to show that vulnerability when it's time to. The timing is very important as well. So I always, for example, thought to myself that as a coach, once you call yourself a coach or a leader, you have an added responsibility. And that added responsibility is not to always be right, but it's to be a person that everyone you come across with trusts and knows that you have their best interest in everything that you do and everything that you say. I want to talk to you a little bit about some of my personal insights, and some of these I've already mentioned. How many of you guys have a mentor right now? Here. Okay. Great, great. So a lot of you have a mentor. How many of you consider yourselves mentors? Well, or you have someone right now that you're mentoring, actually. Okay, that's great. So you're passing the baton, essentially. You're really stretching yourself, and you're also lifting others. Now, the mentorship program, as I told you, is one that is invaluable, that you have at your disposal here at Rutgers, at the Rutgers Fellowship. Let me tell you how it has helped me recently. I connected with a mentee of mine who started and who participated in the mentorship program 3 years ago here. And recently, we got together over dinner. We got together over dinner at a conference that we both attended. And he shared with me some of the great insights on what his medical science liaison team is currently doing, how they're capturing information from attending scientific conferences that's up to date and that is very trending now in their company. And it started with one other person, one other partner that he had, and now it has grown. Now, because he conveyed that to me, I learned a lot of new information from him, even though he's a mentee. So remember that mentorship is a contract. It's an agreement between two people. As long as both of you have an ongoing dialogue, you both learn from each other. So the one point in this kind of personal story that I want you to remember is to really be more active in the mentorship program here. I've had other mentees in my life also at the program. And they've gone on to be successful. I know, and because I've heard about it from LinkedIn, or they you know, we've written each other. But they were not as active, for example, as this one mentor that I just talked to you about was. And who recently, for example, I heard about him, about some personal life events that have happened in his life, and that he just called me about and let me know. And that made me feel good that he was able to cross that life-work boundary and trust me and empower me also as a mentor. So mentors also feel fulfilled and successful when their mentees reach your heights. I talk about responsibilities. A true leader is also a mentor, is also a coach, is also a manager, is also a student or a fellow. Remember that. You have to start creating other leaders. And you have to make people feel and become important. Because regardless of how old we are, and I talked about, you know, trying to feel younger today, and as you can see, I'm someone that is very interested in having maintaining youthful spirit through my science, through teaching and learning at the same time. Regardless of where you are in your life, we don't really change much after we grow from childhood. No matter how old you are or where you are in your life, you always want two things, which is to feel important and to really be heard and share feelings with people and to have attention and importance. And you feel that throughout different milestones that you reach. So as a leader, as a fellow, make more people feel important and become important as well. Create more leaders. And you can start, you know, early. As Theodore Roosevelt said, and I like this quote a lot, nobody cares about what you know until they know that you care. It's very true. So this point here that I'm going to make also is related, because best coaches do not have to be the best players. Am I the best MSL? Am I the best MS fellow that Dr. Toscani or Dr. Barone had? Probably not. But I know that I'm fulfilled with helping people lift other people. I feel successful when I do. And I, 3 days ago, as I mentioned to you guys, I interviewed a mentor of mine, you know, the cardiologist, Dr. Ferdinand. And I remember that feeling that I had. It was just, I felt like successful because I was able to express my gratitude to him as my mentor. And at the same time, felt like he showed a lot of respect for with his time. So the point here is, if you are a leader and if you want to become coach, you have to study and observe the human condition everywhere, at work, in life. And you have to feel that way when you inspire others and you lift other people. So Jose Mourinho, how many of you guys follow soccer? Do you know who he is? Yes, right? Maybe you do. All right, good. So, Jose Mourinho, he's a Portuguese soccer coach that everybody emulates, right, that everybody's inspired by. He led teams to European championships in Spain, in Italy, in England, yet in top in their respective Premier Leagues. But he himself, as a player, he never reached farther than a second division in Portugal as a player. But he went on, he became a trainer, he trained himself to be a coach, and the results speak for themselves. And that is relevant, particularly in that example that I shared with you earlier, with the fellow that I helped hire, right, that I wanted to persuade and to choose our fellowship over the others simply because of the experience that I had that was invaluable during my fellowship at Sanofi. Regardless of the merger that was happening and the dynamic that was taking place. So it was a very big decision that she had to make, and she made the decision, and she's gone on to become a senior director market access at Pfizer. Leadership is your choice. It's never given to you by others. So leadership, many people define it as a title, but it's not a title. Leadership is a way of life. Okay. So as a fellow, I provided you with that example with my precept, who I'm forever grateful to, who wasn't sure about his own future at the time that the dynamic was changing in the department, but he taught me a lot. He exposed me to great great individuals, leaders in publications management. To this day, I keep in touch with them. And most recently, I've learned to network better, be more entrepreneurial, keep in touch with them more. But at that turning point in my career, when I wasn't sure about where I was going to go, I didn't have any offers at the time, and I wanted to talk about he was not able to help. You know, when I asked, you know, I want to talk about, you know, being an MSL, maybe at San Fentis. He knew he couldn't help, and he said, Tim, you're just a fellow. I have my son. He's a medical student. He's been trying to become an MSL, you know, a long time. So it may take you some time. I can give you a recommendation, but right now I don't know what I can do to help. Right? And at that point, I asked for 2 days off and to attend this seminar where I met and networked with many people, and I met somebody who introduced me to someone that helped me find my first MSL role. And as I mentioned, I had two other offers after that based on the meaningful relationships that I formed during that fellowship. Staying humble and reflective always. So if you were to choose leadership and power and influence, my big suggestion is for you to choose leadership, because leadership is constant. Power is temporary. And I often say that investing into the power market is as volatile and as risky as investing into the stock market. You have to take many vacations from it. You know, you have to recharge from feeling powerful, because you need to have a lot of stamina and a lot in order for that to have impact on others. But when you live in a way that's leadership based, you're able to always impact people, and you'll have your own pace. When I was graduating from Xavier College of Pharmacy, I had one of my best friends there that I studied with together, and however, he fell behind, unfortunately. He fell behind not because he was not intelligent, but because he had a life situation, life response. He started a family before I did in his life, very early. He had a lot of responsibility with his fiance and family and so forth, and he couldn't dedicate himself to pharmacy school. And what I was upset with, observing my team or my group, was that many people kind of shunned him a little bit, didn't involve him, you know, because of the fact that he stayed behind. So I remember clearly getting up on stage when we were kind of all interested in each other and celebrating each other. And the one point that I made was, we'll all be successful at our own time, but let's remember the people that we started with and that are our friends. All right, and that was at Xavier College of Pharmacy, and I'm still friends with him today. And he's a successful individual, along with his wife. These are some of the snippets of why I think teaching matters to me, leadership matters. So you have to stay humble. You have to know, as a leader, regardless of the title that you have, to sometimes stay in the shade, sometimes expose your message to the sun. And that's a difficult art. But listening is a part of leadership. And why? Because when you listen throughout your conversations, you make other people feel important, and you give them the attention that they need. And they're able to share more information with you. You, as a result, become more informed, and you're able to have more impact on others. So I want to ask you guys on your comments from the different environments that you're in currently. Because company culture is led by leaders. And company culture is a part of what I always observe. At the company, the startup company where I work, I was called in to restructure the culture and values of the company on behalf of medical affairs. So that was an honor for me to be nominated for that kind of responsibility. And as a result, I surveyed my team, the entire medical affairs team that I had, to understand what are we lacking, what do we really want in terms of our culture and environment. So this is a topic that I also discuss in my personal pages as well, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, on my LinkedIn personal page as well. Now I want to ask you guys, can somebody just shout out a couple of values that are important to your company, wherever you are, as a fellow or even as a student? Can somebody just, something that sticks in your mind now? Can anyone? Yes, yes. Putting patients first. Okay, yes, we've heard that one, right? Yes.
Follow the science.
follow the science. Oh, I like that, especially as a medical science liaison for about 15 years. Yes, so that is, these are great examples. And here's another example, not related to the pharmaceutical industry. Flour company, Bob's Red Mill, in these few words, an employee-owned company, you get a glimpse into what behavior is valued. An employee-owned company, you understand how important employees probably feel, the voice that they have in decision-making. When I advised our executive team at this company, which is no longer an entity, unfortunately, the product has probably been doing well, I made one distinction. Company culture is character times behavior, where behavior is what is the multiplicative factor, right? The more influential factor in the equation. That's very important to understand, because character is a spectrum. And what part of your character you express is dependent on the circumstances, on the environment. You may be an honest person or a passionate person, for example, but you may not express that passion if that passion is not valued or if you don't trust the people that you're working with, for example. Right? So character is also static. It's an episodic kind of term, whereas behavior is something constant, consistent. When you talk to some coaches at MIT, for example, they tell you that you're an expert at whatever you do all the time and whatever you do consistently. So you need about 10,000 hours, apparently. There's a science to this. I don't know how true it is from my experience, but I definitely took 3 years before I really mastered being an espresso. But you need a consistent process regardless of what it is that you're working on. And behavior is something that's consistent, whereas character, really, you can't enforce character in people, in adults, after ages 3 to 7, depending on what psychologist you speak to. Behavior, however, is the direction of an employee. I started with my definition of leading. As a leader, you're somewhat of a navigator. You take someone somewhere to destination. So I remember another value here that triggered a specific behavior from AstraZeneca, my first MSL role, my full-time MSL role, for 6 years, and it is winning the right way. Right? Winning the right way, I think, stimulates you to approach every relationship, every conversation in a way that is probably going to follow the science, as you said, and also the patients first, right, is what you said. And therefore, it is behavior that I emphasized in my recommendations. Now, let's look at how culture changes over time. Culture of a company is somewhat of an environment. It's how you feel. It's how safe you feel to voice your idea. Over time, people usually are very excited. You know, you have a pipeline product that is very promising. Once the product is launched, whether or not the company does very well or it fails, like I also described in my previous company, the culture seems to scatter at high performance or low performance, but the companies that trigger a particular behavior rather than character, they're able to make the culture constant, right, or keep the culture constant. How do you really inspire people to grow, to lead others, to provide value? And I look at it from these two mindsets. Be sports athletes and scientists regardless of your profession. I think whether or not you are running your own team, your company, if you are able to stimulate people to have a sports and a scientific mindset, then everyone in your organization, even the janitor, will try to look for better detergents, all right, more healthier detergents with which to clean your offices. That's very important. Why? Well, sports athletes, what do? They break personal records, but they compete also. But they compete against themselves first. When they compete against others, they do so in sportsmanlike conduct, professionalism, and integrity. They practice. If you talk to the best star athletes, they'll tell you that they practice a lot. You know, a lot more than I did, even though I was I was an amateur and I loved all kinds of sports, but I just didn't have the discipline. Well, they have that discipline. They practice. And they master techniques through practice. And they always know that they need a coach. There's always a subspecialty coach in every sport discipline. Baseball, pitching, coach, all kinds of coaches. Same thing in track and field, which I like a lot, for example. Right? In track and field, you have the long jumpers who have their coaches and so forth and so on. Well, scientists, what do scientists do? They always ask questions. They observe. They make observations. They come up with, they create systems and techniques and technologies, right? And they create solutions to one problem, but also systems that can help you start your pharmaceutical company, for example, one day. So just with a show of hands, how many of you want to pursue a career in the commercial side or? Because, great. So, regulatory, anybody in regulatory? Yeah. All right, so these comments were meant not just for those who want to become MSLs, just to be clear here. This approach, I think, is quite universal across different disciplines that you may pursue. Now, another question I want to ask, how many of you have seen a culture initiative being implemented in your company? Does anybody, how many, let's see, okay. So we have a few, right, couple, yeah? Is that through a fellowship? What kind of outcomes did you see in terms of leadership?
I don't know if anyone heard the beginning of that. Okay, so hi, I'm a student. So this came from a hospital role that I was in, and the goal of the initiative was to create a culture in which we were reducing errors. And the culture at the time was maybe people were afraid to report errors that were happening because sometimes that can implicate you or a coworker, and that can be scary. And so to get around some of those feelings, what the hospital staff decided to do was to report good catches. So if you or a colleague happened to make a good catch in which you prevented something really bad from happening, they would highlight that to the whole organization and say, highlight this good catch. So it created a culture where people were looking to make good catches and also a place where people felt safe coming out and saying that and identifying systems that improved before they resulted in the errors. So the outcome was that it was really successful in not only reducing errors, but just making these people feel more comfortable and that they were contributing to the end goal.
Yep. Thank you for that great example. I happen to have worked on the medication error project and a publication that I was able to carry to completion thanks to the fellowship here, and which allowed me to actually be invited to speak at Grand Rounds with a multidisciplinary team on medication errors and their sequelae. So that's all due to this fellowship. You know, and Sanofi Event is the vice president of their medical affairs. Even up to the last few days of my fellowship there, actually communicated the results of the report of our study throughout the entire company. And so medication errors is a great example in multidisciplinary team and how empowered we should feel as pharmacists, those of us who are pharmacists as well. Just very quickly, just maybe top line results from your, I'm just curious to hear.
I was in a research lab, and with research we were celebrating all the successes of the lab groups, but we didn't accept all the failures that we had within our lab as well. So we just created a little board that we could write all of our failures on. I mean, we'd actually be pretty proud of the failures, because then we got to start a new and exciting project that we were hoping for.
So I talked about a little bit about sports and scientists, and we all get very competitive, and it's very important to compete against yourself. So this is one example of a recommendation or suggestion that a very famous actor made in a video. And a young girl, she asked him, you know, what is the key to success? And I was very curious, I was fascinated by the response, which I always thought that it was true for me. Do not ever envy anyone or anything that belongs to anyone. And then she went on to ask why. Well, because it distracts you from being successful with whatever you do. I talk about being self-driven. no matter how self-driven we may think we are, you always have to understand that there's no one in this world that's self-driven, that's self-taught, that's self-made, without a push, without some kind of pull, without a platform, without an inspiration. So whenever you talk about being self-driven, always remember the who, if you will. Remember the who in your life. Who was important that inspired you? It's something that I use in over Thanksgiving. You know, on Thanksgiving we usually are grateful to each other. Well, we can use this not just for Thanksgiving holiday with your family, but always recognize others, recognize each other. With the last few minutes here, I want to tell you how to be able to handle some challenges that you may face, right? You need to change the way you see in order to change the way you think. Look, if you see, this is a Salvador Dali painting here. And when you look at it attentively, you'll notice that there are actually two pictures here. There's two individuals here. You see it, right? So this is true. This is true for reframing, let's say, a merger. Reframing some kind of trials and tribulations that you may be going through, failures. By dissecting it in its different parts. But to dissect what is helpful from this uncertain situation that I'm in this imminent merger. Maybe there's someone that I can connect there with. Maybe I can learn a new skill in the short time that I have remaining. Or maybe I can talk about how I can continue to work in the same area, but with a different person. The way I applied this recently was with my daughter. I talked to you about the track and field, right? So I trained her with the long jump, and I'm trying to have her stretch herself a little bit and set personal records. And she was stuck with this one personal record for a long time. And in order to kind of have her stretch harder, I told her, imagine that this mat is a puddle of dirty water. You know, and I kind of said it very adamantly, and I connected with her. The next thing I knew, in about 5 minutes, she jumped over the entire mat for the first time. I'm trying to bridge the gap here of the 15 years that has passed since my fellowship. And this is an important point to understand, that the skills that you are building now may not be sufficient in 15 years. You may need to do some even video editing, some copywriting, some content development. You don't know what skills you may need. So at every different milestone of your life, the life requires a different part of you. So you need to remix yourself at different stages of life. And keep growing your roots. Generosity is something that you guys mentioned. When you lift others higher, try to be generous. Generous here is in its smallest print on purpose, because most of us usually provide a selfish type of help. Not because we're selfish, but because we're so distracted with our own problems. So when somebody doesn't help you, doesn't send a CV to somebody, chances are you don't need to be offended, but it's because they are just overwhelmed and they can't take themselves out of the comfort zone. Empathy is the current trending word, empathetic help, but empathy doesn't always relate to an outcome. It's somebody that is a sounding board, it's very important. But I want to help stretch ourselves and be generous more often, where you don't need a strategy. When you're generous, you provide generous help to people, to each other. You don't need a strategy. Because when you're in a mountain and you're helping somebody below you, you don't think about a strategy, you just stretch out your hand, right? So I have a podcast on that you can see as well. Behavior is your number one brand. What makes you different is not where you're from, what school you're from, but what you do. Always remember that as you're building your own personal brands. We all want to be recognized for our efforts, and we want to have a dialogue, to share feelings and ideas with people. That's what really determines our happiness. Remember that leadership and success are not happiness. Success is an episode. Leadership is a process and way of life. And I apologize for this being kind of off here. Wasn't intended to be. Wasn't like that on my computer. But the idea, you get the picture. So happiness is also dependent on the people that you have. with you as well. What you can do in the race to happiness is you can have an attitude that's going to welcome happiness. And leadership, and the leadership way of life, and success is going to increase your likelihood of being happy in life and work. But if you don't have other people who are going to start the gun for that race to happiness, then you may fall short a lot. Or you may, the race may never begin to happiness. So remember that when you're in a beautiful environment, such as the Spanish Steps in Rome, for example, the number of steps that are needed to climb does not matter anymore when you're with the right people, with people who support you, who are loyal to you in life. In fact, you're more willing to continue to climb, even if it's not comfortable, when you have the right people. This is cut off, but the point here is that I'm grateful, and in fact, I can't express how grateful I am to this Rutgers Fellowship for the baton, the relay baton, to the fellowship that it provided me. And it's very important for me to be able to pass the baton back to you. So always seek the baton, use the baton, and hold the baton and pass it to the other people. Because you don't want to be like the United States track and field Olympics teams that had the best individual athletes on their relay teams, but as a relay team for four Olympics in a row, they dropped the baton. And as a team, they didn't do well. You will go through many trials and tribulations, failures, successes. But remember to develop your character, develop meaningful dialogues and interactions with everyone you come across. And I look forward to hearing from you as you pass the baton back with this relay to leadership. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Great presentation. We really appreciate it. I think we also have a gift for you here as well for your time.
Thank you very much, Dr. T. Thank you.